Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina, and as always, I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Scott Chu. How's it going there, Scott?
Couldn't be better. I mean, it could in so many ways, but it's a pretty good day. I actually was, I was playing a lotto ticket the other day, and I won $750.
So
everything else this week doesn't matter. It's all good.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I will quickly blow that money on extremely frivolous items.
I was going to say another Scooble rookie card or something.
Oh, well, I mean, I'd also have to buy more binders to hold them, but yes.
Okay. Maybe you could just build like an homage to Scooble.
Yeah, there's definitely not one already in here. That's right. No. Definitely still have to build that. Didn't already do that.
All right. So we're recording this May 17th. It's about 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this podcast is coming out on the 18th. And you know what the 18th is, Scott? It's Reggie Jackson's birthday. Not Reggie Jackson, the basketball player, but Reggie Jackson, former A, former Yankee, former Angel. Are you familiar with Reggie Jackson? I know you know almost about everything about today's baseball, but are you familiar with some of the players from yesteryear?
Oh, he's got just that classic look to me of like an 80s ball player, like even early 90s, just like that thick, like, you know, like the well manicured hair, but very like thick and dense. Right. And then like the big aviator glasses, you know, and just
the mustache.
Like looking,
the mustache,
yeah,
right?
And just looking salty all the time. Just well, always grumpy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, man, he was one of my favorite ball players, you know, historically, like in the recent Yankee history. Yankees signed him in 77. Power hitter. If you look at him and his prime, he looked like a baseball player, just like, you know, he was one of the first baseball players that I remember that was really, really built, you know. Then you had the Jose Canseco's and you know, Mark McGuire's and guys like that. But, you know, what was funny is when I watched him when he played, you know, he was always like one of the biggest ball players. But now watching him in, you know, when they show some old games like on the Yankee Yes Network and whatnot, and you compare him to what some of the ball players look like today, he's almost like tiny. You know, it's amazing. But
Aaron Judge will do that to you.
Yeah, yeah. 563 lifetime home runs, 2,597 strikeouts in his career, the most of any player. But at the same time, I'll mention this, and then we'll get on because I don't want to spend too much time on Reggie Jackson. But he had a 22.7 lifetime K rate, and that's nothing by today's standards, right?
No, nothing. It's great.
Yeah. And yet he was, you know, like I said, he had the most total strikeouts in the history of the game, 2,597. So happy birthday, Reggie Jackson. And thanks for winning a couple championships for the Yankees. So at this stage, Scott, we've been talking about in recent episodes how it's early. Don't worry about it. I mean, the batting averages could make such a significant change with just a good weekend. You know, we're a little over 6 weeks into the season. At this stage, do you think it's time to start to take a real inventory of your teams, and where do you find yourself being more patient and more impatient? You know, like are you more patient in, let's say, a 15 team league where the player pool is a little bit more shallow than, you know, and you don't have great options like when you're dropping somebody, as opposed to, let's say, 10 and 12 team leagues?
Yeah. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at replacement cost. Like, what is it going to take to get another player in this spot, and how good will they be? Right. So in three outfield leagues, my patience for outfielders is basically none. Right. As much as I still believe in Jesse Winker, in three outfield leagues, I might've cut him in a league or two where I had a pinch. Right. Because outfield replacement level is just so high. I don't need to wait for Jesse Winker. There's plenty of other stuff out there. Whereas in a 15 team league, five outfield, I have to hold on to Jesse Winker. I mean, maybe I'll bench him, but he's been, of course, much better lately. That's why I'm using his as an example. He'll be the feature, you know, he's the feature of this week's hitter list, just, you know, in terms of the graphic. But the thing is, like, when you're in a 15 team, five outfield league, for example, what on the waiver wire at any given time has more upside than Jesse Winker, like just returning to 75% of what he could be, right? The answer is probably not much. There's not much out there that could match that. So why would I cut Jesse Winker for someone who probably can't be, you know, 2/3 of Jesse Winker?
Right.
Right. So that, and that means the gamble I'm taking, unless I've seen something that just makes it look truly miserable, which is not a stat page, but like in that case, like all I want is to hold and see if like that, cause that's my best move. That's how I move up in the rankings. It's my guy getting better. If I'm behind in power and I, you know, hate to use the example now, but like a Franmil Reyes, if I really needed power, nobody on the wire hits for power at all. Like what Franmil Reyes can do. Mm-hmm. Franmil Reyes can hit more homes on runs in a week than most guys on the wire will in a month. So why would you cut him to mess around with that garbage?
Right, right. So I've got a situation with Mitch Haniger, and he's on a 15-team league where I'm starting five outfielders, and I haven't cut him. I have him on my bench. But like you mentioned, in a league where I'm only starting three outfielders, he would have been gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't hate cutting him, to be honest with you, because it's like a 10 to 12-week timeline that he's looking at. So if it's one of those no IL leagues like the NFBC, I'm not sure there's enough upside in Haniger to really hold him for that long because it is just a power bat. Right. But again, something worth noting, and it can't be stressed enough, that when you're looking at your players, like let's say you're looking at Bo Bichette, who's been much better in May, right? Much better. You still have to look. So he's played just about every game. He's only played 36 games. That's as many as just about anyone. He has 158 plate appearances. He will likely end the season with anywhere from like between 650 and 700 plate appearances. That means he's done 158 and he has like 450 to go.
Right.
No, like 500 to go. He's basically probably got another 500 to go.
Basically a quarter of the season is gone for him.
Right.
So he's got 75%, but you know, of his at-bats still yet to come.
Right. And I'm not saying like he's going to be just what he was last year. Like you have to recalibrate your expectations a little bit. Like instead of like last year, he was 29 home runs, 25 stolen bases. Now this year, I'm like, well, he got off to the slow start. That'd be hard to catch up. So maybe now I think of him more as like a 25 home run, 20 stolen base guy. You know, take five off of each one because he's run a little bit, but he hasn't hit the homers I'm hoping for, blah, blah, blah. So I'll recalibrate my expectations. And by doing that, it also probably will help a lot of folks think of players, not so much of like what's good coming forward. It's okay, I knew at the beginning of the year that these numbers would be a good player. So you can put it back in that context and you can say, okay, so like if I'm looking at a Fangraphs page, I'm going to take the current stats plus one of the projected stats and then just think like, okay, what kind of player is that? Is that a player who's good? Could I find something like that on the waiver wire? Because most of us think of players in terms of their full season outputs, not their monthly or 122 game outputs, right? So that's probably the easiest way to think about it. And again, players had last season 36 game slumps. They happened, but they weren't so noticeable because they were, you know, they were sort of sandwiched between better times. So you didn't notice it as much. You probably heard about it in a podcast and that's it. But when players slump in the beginning of the season, it's the only stats they have.
Sure. Magnified. Yep.
Right. Now, but that doesn't mean, though, that you should just totally ignore them. Like one of them I'm really worried about, honestly, is Marcus Semien, because he hasn't just been bad. He's been abysmal. Horrid. Right. He flashed a sign of like for like 2 days. He had like back to back two hit games and then it was just over again. So now you're almost wondering, like, what is still available? Like, what can I still get out of this? You know, like those projection systems are generally very good. They'll be slow to adjust from their early season projections, but they will eventually. But even then with Marcus Semien, you have to start thinking like, okay, in what league can you cut him? Not 15, probably not 12, but you know, those 8 and 10 teamers, especially if it's like a super shallow league where you don't have middle infields, I could see someone cutting Marcus Semien in that spot. Mm-hmm. Because let's be, ain't nobody trading anything for him. I don't know, maybe if someone gives you a player they would have cut, great. But that's the hard place you're in right now. So then you have to start thinking, you know, in an 18 league, Jeremy Pena might still be on the wire, right? So like there's replacements. But in a 15 team league, what's out there? Jose Iglesias? You're going to run that out there? Be like, oh yeah, this will get me what I wanted from Marcus Semien. Not even close.
Mm.
So, I mean, he might this week because they're in Coors and anything can happen, but you just can't find a long-term solution that way.
Right.
I know that's a lot to just talk about, but it's the thing everyone should be trying to do right now.
Yeah.
And what you're all you're looking for from players right now is signs of life. Jesse Winker, signs of life, right? Signs of life that they're getting back in the swing of things. It was still a weird offseason. All that stuff, like that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, he's in a new ballpark too, and he's played his entire major league career in a little bandbox, right, in Cincinnati. So that you take that into consideration as well. So, you know, I was going to get to these guys a little bit later, but since we're on this kind of topic, I'll ask you about Tyler O'Neill. You know, what do you do with Tyler O'Neill? Is it you've got? He's got a 29% K rate. I mean, you know, he was a little bit polarizing in preseason drafts. You had some drafters that loved him, others that were concerned that he, you know, struck out 31% of the time last season, had the big season last season as well. Others, they swore by him and thought he was a great, you know, five-tool investment. And some of those that swore by him, now they're swearing at him. So in a three outfielder league, is he droppable at this point, Tyler O'Neill?
I mean, again, those 8 and 10 teamers, maybe. I mean, mm-hmm. probably not. The upside's really high. But those shallow leagues, I mean, very few outfielders are even needed. I think the thing that concerns me here is that, you know, one, the plate discipline is actually better than it was last season. When you just look at, like, current numbers versus last season's numbers. Mm-hmm. But what I think what's just worrying me is really the lack of power. Like, the speed can still come, right? Like, we saw Jose Ramirez go through horrible slumps for like 2 years, but he saw the speed, right? And I do still think that you can get like 15 steals. The question is going to be, when is the power coming? He has a strangely good like barrel rate and things like that, but the hard hit rate is awful. The Statcast stats are all going to be kind of redundant because they're all about quality of contact, and he's making bad contact. And you probably already knew that because his stats are abysmal. But he is barreling them up from time to time. Like, what, he is finding them, just not the way that he should. I'm really, you know, like, I do expect this 6.1% home run to fly ball rate to fix itself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he's not hitting very many deep fly balls. He's hitting a lot of weak stuff. So I expect correction. But again, I'm going to recalibrate here. I'm not going to think of him as the 35 home run, 15 to 20 stolen base guy that I might have thought he could do in the preseason. Like, that projection can't work anymore because that projection didn't bake in a 30 game start with a 65 WRC plus, right? That projection required a little more juice to start the season. So now I'm going to recalibrate. And what do I think he can be? I'm probably a little more pessimistic than some of these projections, but I think that by the end of the season, he could look like a 240 hitting 25 home run, 15 stolen base guy. That's not unlike what I've projected for Christian Yelich, to be honest with you, except a much better OBP for Yelich. Yeah. But, you know, that's still a useful player, but it just might not be good enough in certain shallow leagues where you don't need very many outfielders.
Right. Yeah. Two home runs in his first 30 games and three stolen bases during that period as well. So, yeah, you said 25 home runs while you were going through that. Before you even said it, I was thinking 27. So we kind of agree. So how about the Wonder Twins?
Wonder Twin powers activate!
Stephen Kwan and Owen Miller for the Guardians. I mean, Stephen Kwan's still batting second. Last time I looked very recently, Owen Miller was still batting cleanup. Stephen Kwan especially kind of fueled It was during the first few weeks of the season. Anybody who was rostering Stephen Kwan kind of was at almost at the top of their leagues. What are you doing with Stephen Kwan and Owen Miller at this stage? Both don't have a long track record in the major leagues, but have had good success, especially OBP-wise, in the minor leagues.
So Stephen Kwan still just looks like a contact god to me. Mm-hmm. That guy, he never strikes out. He will take walks, so you can't just pick around him. The problem here is that the Guardians started the season scoring a boatload of runs, and that just wasn't going to continue. That's just not something this team was capable of doing. So, for example, Stephen Kwan is still hitting 280 on the season, right? He's still getting on base plenty. The problem is that it doesn't matter if no one else is doing anything. Their offense is just slowed down in general. You know, so it just means there's less there. Now, it doesn't help that he's hitting 208 on the month, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he had, you know how many combined home runs and stolen bases Stephen Kwan had in the month of April?
Off the top of my head, none.
Zero. Not one, right? Because he's very much a Luis Arraez, David Fletcher, this kind of type of player who just doesn't provide a lot. And their value is really dependent on how often his teammates can drive him in. And that has slowed down a lot. Part of it, again, he's not hitting great. And the other part of it is just that there's not as much going there. This whole offense has just changed. So I'd say I'm much more optimistic on Kwan, because at least Kwan has the tool. That hit tool is legitimate. Right, it's as good as a hit tool as there is in the major leagues when it comes to putting the bat on the ball. So that's a skill you can buy into, especially if you're in a points league. Owen Miller was the more sort of surprising one to me. He was not nearly as heralded as a prospect. Like, Kwan was a top 100 prospect coming into the year, right? And in fact, Fangraphs had him at 58. But Owen Miller was like a nobody. Who, I mean, he did good in the minor leagues last year, but in the majors where he spent more time, he was awful. So I was surprised to see him come on. But even then, right, this was never a player who was going to hit for a ton of power. So early in the season, he did, like, he just wrecked all these doubles and home runs, right? And then since then, he has, I think, four doubles and a home run since April 17th. Let me tell you how many plate appearances that is. That's 79. 79 plate appearances. He had five extra base hits, right? That's not a good way to do this. He just doesn't have a ton of power. He was never going to provide speed. So you needed him to get a lot of runs in RBI. But the problem is, despite hitting fourth, he only has six RBI in the last month. Mm-hmm. Right now, again, he missed a chunk of time in there. But there's still a lot of plate appearances here. Like 79 plate appearances, six RBI, that doesn't line up. Reason that's happening, partially, again, is just team context. There's not as many guys to drive in, right? Now, again, it's not like he's hitting a ton of home runs or anything, but, you know, he has plenty of games where, you know, he gets like multiple hits, like a single and a double, and no counting stats He gets nothing for it, right? He had, you know, another game, he'll have two hits, he got a double, and then at least he got the two runs in RBI. But like early in the season, they were all just piling up because there was a bunch of Guardians on base all the time.
Yeah,
he couldn't turn around without driving runners in or scoring runs or whatever he needed to do, right? Like, he scored 8 runs in 4 games as the number 6 hitter for the Guardians. How long was that going to continue, Joe? How many games can you score 2 runs for the Guardians as the number 6 hitter? Turns out it was because he was playing Cincinnati during that time and the back end of the Royals rotation, but whatever. So those guys, Kwan, again, some value in leagues where, again, you have a lot of outfield and you need at-bats and you need ratios. He'll be great for those. Also good for points league because he just puts he makes a lot of contact. He's going to hit near the top of the order. There's no other place to put him because he's not like a speed demon, right? He's not like fake second leadoff man. He's a leadoff guy. Because he always puts or at least one or two, right? Always
when
puts
when he strikes out, you're shocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rarely happens. He's got like almost a 13% walk rate and an 8% strikeout rate. Like, that's just how he works. Then there's Owen Miller. And quite frankly, I've cut him in a couple of places because his upside was never that high to begin with. This was always a guy where it's like, well, ride it while it's hot. There's probably not much here. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you rode it while it was hot. And now you're realizing there's probably not a ton here. And so if something else comes up and you have another guy you want to put in at first or second base, maybe like a Colton Wong, do it. Or a Gene Segura, who's been absolutely on fire. I would absolutely make that move. Yep. In just about every, in every league.
That's a tough skill to have, to know when it's time to cut someone in some respects, because there's nothing worse than cutting a player and then watching him go off.
But again, and I'm glad you brought that up, because like, mm-hmm. what if I do that and then Owen Miller has a hot week? I don't care, because I've already made a decision. I've made my evaluation of the player. I don't think there's more than, I think maybe a 15 home run guy with a decent, with decent ratios, not even amazing, just decent. Like, you saw what he looked like during a hot streak, and it was pretty good, but that's like absolute ceiling, and he's not going to do that for very long. Hmm. So I'm going to cut him, and I'm just going to replace him with someone else and try to get their ceiling. And then when it goes away, cut him.
Like, you really wouldn't care? I mean, I'd care.
I mean, I care about them. I want them to succeed and be happy, because I want that for everyone. But I also like just don't need it on my fantasy team. Hmm. I can keep moving on, especially, with second base, which has been deeper than I expected this season. Even in a deeper league, if Andrés Giménez was still out there, absolutely grabbing him.
Another guardian, yeah. Hey, since you mentioned Marcus Semien, let's take a minute or two, talk about Trevor Story, who has gotten off to a real rough start, as have some other Red Sox players. But since you mentioned Semien and his slump, who do you think snaps out of their slump? Who do you have more faith in by end of season? Trevor Story or Marcus Semien? Now, Story has a 32% K rate, hit a home run on Monday night. So now he has two home runs in his first 30 games. But like I mentioned, batting average just about 200 at this stage.
Yeah, but you know what I really liked is that he's got three straight games with a stolen base and three straight games with a walk, right? That signs of life. And if anyone's into Reddit and you're on the Fantasy Baseball Reddit, you'll know that I spearhead our weekly Reddit AMA. And I thought Asher, one of the guys on staff, had a great point that the approach that Story likes to take, which is this heavy pull hitting right-handed guy, it could not be better for him than to be in Fenway Park. Mm-hmm. That's going to start working. He is going to rope doubles off that wall over and over again. I know it. So, I mean, it's going to be like, he's a different player than Manny Ramirez, but just think right-hander trying to just bounce stuff off the top, third of that wall if they can't get it over. It's just doubles every time. So I think that's, it's interesting to see them drop him in the order. I'm glad it seems to be working a little bit. He's certainly scored a lot more runs and driven in more runners the last few games. And I have some faith there, where with Semien, I'm just not seeing it. What am I supposed to be excited about? Right? Like, Story, at least he's got two home runs in his last five games, three stolen bases, some walks, fewer strikeouts, all kinds of things happening in an incredibly small sample, but something. What has Semien got? Right? Like, nothing. He hasn't done anything. He has two stolen bases. He has a 33 WRC plus. Right? He has eight RBI. Eight. What am I supposed to do with that?
Could have been seven.
He has no home runs. He's still making plenty of contact.
Yeah.
He's making plenty of contact. It's just garbage contact. Right now, I'd say the thing I have seen just from like sort of box score browsing is if there was, it might be pressing a little bit, right? Like he might be sort of making contact with pitches that probably he shouldn't be going after because he's trying to justify what he's doing. Like his swing rate right now is 53.3%. It's usually around like 40, 45, right? Mm-hmm. Well, 45-ish. So that's way up. He's, his O swing rate last year was 20% or 20.5%. Now it's 29.3%, right? Way up. His zone swing rate, way up. Right. And his contact rates are sort of staying steady, but that's not good because it means he's swinging at and making contact with a lot of junk. Right. He's making a bunch of contact on outside pitches. He's making less contact on pitches in the zone, and he's swinging more and hitting worse pitches. Right? There's nothing there yet. Can he turn it around? Sure, because he's shown this skill set several times now. He has that skill set, but we also know that his slumps are ugly. They're ugly, and they can be long. They can be, you know, all season long, right? That 2020 season, I mean, it was only 53 games, but it was bad. It was really bad. So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if later we hear he had some Eddie Rosario vision problem or whatever, but this is a very troubling turn. And no matter how hard I look, I just don't see the signs of life yet. All I can really say is like, well, his plate discipline's okay. Like, how can I say that he's definitively better than Jurickson Profar for the rest of the season when I think they're both like 20 home run, 10 stolen base guys? Right? Because Semien was never that good with batting average anyway. Career 253 hitters. So it's not that I don't have faith. It's just like, if I have faith, what do I have faith in? Right? He ain't hitting 45 home runs. Probably not hitting 30 either. Right? Yeah. Neither one. So now what? Now what do I do? I try to project him to be something else. I think the other projection systems are pretty smart, and none of them think he's better than 22 more home runs, which more would just mean total, because he still doesn't have one in 143 plate appearances. So I know I'm rambling a lot, but like, this is a really, really troubling thing. And, you know, again, I know I've said you can't cut him in super deep leagues because like, there's still even in 12 team leagues with middle infield, because there's still value in a 20 home run, 10 stolen base, 250 hitter with obviously upside to be much better than that. But, you know, every week that goes by, we get closer and closer to crunch time, and we get closer and closer to maybe he's just, you know, he's like the Eric Molds of fantasy baseball, where it's just every other year. I don't know.
And for the love of God, even in a 15 teamer, if you're not cutting him, bench him, please.
Yeah, bench. Everyone always asks me if they should cut someone. No one ever asks me if they should bench him. It's an option. Bench him.
It's obvious. Yeah. And when it comes to Story, good analysis on your part. I do notice he's hitting a lot of fly balls and has an overabundance, though, of infield fly balls. So maybe he's just like, you know, just his swing is off. Maybe he's trying too hard. Maybe he's trying too hard to hit the ball over that green monster. So
that's a real thing. We don't talk about it enough. It's pressing. Actually, you know, Sarah does a nice job talking about this on the Athletic podcast, but like, that's a thing that real people do. All of us do it. You know, like when I would sub as a rec league soccer goalie, not doing that right now because I just destroyed my knee. But when I would sub for other teams, I would absolutely try to put on like my best possible face. And sometimes that meant I was a little over aggressive, trying to make the big save, trying to show off a little like, oh yeah, don't worry guys, I'm here. I got you. Right. You got the right guy for the job. And then sometimes it would lead to me having a miserable night because I'm not playing the way I expect to play. I expect that's exactly what's going on with Story. And with Semien, it's that. And then it's also got to be more. Cause again, this is just really bad.
Right.
He's slugging 215. That's a bad OBP.
And the Red Sox really need Story to come on because it doesn't look like Xander Bogaerts is going to be on their team next year. I mean, he has the option to opt out, and all signs point to him probably doing that. It seems that he was insulted with the Red Sox extension offer that they gave him. I think they just gave him a one-year extension offer. So Story was basically an insurance policy for the Red Sox. So we'll see what happens there.
I mean, we've watched him wear Red Sox colors for, what is it now? Actually, I know what it is. 4,902 plate appearances heading into tonight. That would just be really weird to see a different jersey.
Hey, you know, money talks. So,
And absolutely no change to his fantasy outlook.
Right.
There's like, it could only, I guess, maybe be a little better if he went to like Colorado and they weren't the Rockies.
Wow. Yeah.
That's about it.
I could see him going to the Angels. Angels still need a shortstop, right?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Mm, add him to that lineup. So, all right, so we're going to take a quick break, and there's a few big name players that hit the IL. We'll talk about the fantasy implications about those players not being in their team's lineups and starting rotations right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we're back. Joe Galina, Scott Chu, Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. And before we took our short break, we were talking about some of the players that hit the IL recently. And Brandon Lau, second baseman for the Rays, is going to be out for the next 3 weeks or so. Stress reaction in his lower back there, Scott. So a couple players come to mind who should benefit and get regular bats. First of all, Vidal Brujan has been playing pretty regularly, and with Lau out, that should help him. But another guy that you had been talking about previously, former Tiger, Isak Paredes. Hopefully, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. He should benefit and get some extra playing time as well, no?
Yeah, I think that he will. And again, there's a reason this team keeps calling him up, and it's because he makes a lot of good contact. He's done it at he hasn't quite done it at the major league level yet, but in the minor leagues, he was, not a ton of power. I mean, actually a fair bit of power, but in 25 games, he had 7 doubles, a triple, 4 home runs. He was only hitting .263, but that's because he had a little bit of a slump lately, but not even that, right? Because he doesn't have back-to-back games without a hit in the minors. Mm. Not one.
Wow.
not a single set of back-to-back games without a hit. Mm. So
that's impressive.
I really like him in very, very, obviously very deep leagues, because playing time is a big question. I think that the impact right now is mostly going to be Vidal Brujan. I like him a lot. But basically, you just got to know that he's just an absolute speed monster. Like, he might be one of the fastest guys in the league right now, and he does have a good hit tool, right? What I really like seeing is last season when we saw him, really small sample, but he couldn't stop striking out. And right now, it's not good contact, but he's making a ton of contact. That's way better than striking out. If he can just make more contact, he doesn't need it to go very far to get on base. This guy's lightning fast. He could definitely have an impact, especially in Roto with stolen bases, if he keeps playing more. But in standard leagues, especially like a head-to-head categories where stolen bases aren't really at a premium, he's not as interesting unless he's truly an everyday player batting in the middle of the order, mm-hmm. which he has been for a few days, but I don't know how long that'll last, especially because he's just not, he's not making enough good contact yet.
Right. Last season, 26 plate appearances in the bigs, had a 30.8% K rate, obviously a very small sample size, and an .077 average. And in his first 22 plate appearances in the bigs this season, cut that K rate down to 9.1. So that's something, still batting .143, but made some improvement on his plate discipline. And like you mentioned, he is a speed demon. I mean, in the minor leagues, had a couple of seasons where he stole just over 40 bases. So we'll see what happens there. Alex Kirilloff, first baseman outfielder for the Twins, got demoted. This seemed to come out of nowhere, and maybe I overvalue him a little bit there, Scott, but I was a little surprised. But I guess when you look at his overall numbers, he struck out 37.5% of the time in the bigs this season with just a 3.1% walk rate. So maybe, you know, he had that time on the IL. Maybe just needed to, you know, a little change of scenery could do him good.
Yeah, and honestly, I think right now they're trying to get a look at Jose Miranda. So that's someone they I think they definitely want to watch. He's not playing terribly well right now, but they want to take a look. And then the corner outfield spots are filled up. They've got Nick Gordon up right now. And they're trying to find him everyday plate appearances. They've got, you know, Giarcello's over at third. You've got Luis Arraez is DHing most days, hitting first or second. So you kind of get to this point where you're like, where do you put him? Right? Where do you put Kirilloff? They've already got a ton of lefties. First base right now is Jose Miranda. When it's not Jose Miranda, it's Luis Arraez. They've already got two first basemen, and it's not like Kirilloff's an amazing defender or something. He's not adding much there. So that makes sense there. They've got plenty of left-handed bats, right, with Arraez, Polanco's a switch, Max Kepler's in right, and then they've got Nick Gordon as well. So there's plenty of left-handed guys. What do you do with a plodding corner outfielder then, right? I mean, I kind of like this approach too, because they've gone for more defense in the outfield with Nick Gordon, Max Kepler, and Byron Buxton. Whereas if they had tried to put like Kirilloff in the outfield, he's kind of a sandbag. So, I mean, I do think that Kirilloff has a good future. I just think that right now, as we talked about a lot in the preseason, the Twins have a weirdly full roster of very similar true talent players.
Yeah.
So some of them, like the ones with options, are going to go back down. Kirilloff's one of them.
Yeah. And Royce Lewis actually doing a decent job filling in at shortstop as well. And we did talk about that, how they had an overabundance of hitters in the preseason, the Twins did. So when it comes to buying low in a dynasty league at this point there, Alex Kirilloff or the recently demoted Joe Adell, who when I last looked in his first eight games back down in the minor leagues was batting .355 with five home runs, a 20% walk rate and a little uncomfortable 25% K rate. Who do you feel that you'd be more comfortable in, let's say, hopefully being able to buy low in a dynasty league, Kirilloff or Adell?
I mean, Adell's ceiling's just so high. Like, I like Kirilloff, but I also kind of know what he is, you know, and it's, I think the one thing you will notice if you look at his minor league numbers, hitting for a ton of power and guess what? Has struck out at least once every game. We talked about this last season as well. Joe Adell is someone you should watch but you need to make sure the strikeouts come down. He is walking a lot as well, but at the same time, he can't strike out this much. And if he's doing that against the minor league opponents, when he gets to the majors, those breaking balls are just going to keep eating him up. He's having a hard time making that adjustment. I do think he can make it, and his upside is, I think one of the early comps when he was still considered one of the top prospects in baseball was like a Byron Buxton, just athlete. He can run. I mean, not this version of Byron Buxton, like the older one maybe, but that's still like, I'm not saying he can be that. I'm saying there is a ceiling there. And with Kirilloff, it's like a decent power hitting corner. Well, for him, it's more like a decent corner outfielder who could hit 25 home runs and bat 280 at his peak. That's fine. But like, there's more of those. You can get those. You can trade for those. Go get some old guy who does that. People are happy to get rid of him. But, you know, if you're trying to stash for upside, it's Adell all the way.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think that Adell does have the higher ceiling. But something clicked when you said, but you kind of know what you got in Kirilloff. Well, maybe we know what we got in Adell, but hopefully we don't. Hopefully there's still better days to come for his next turn in the big leagues. But, you know, the issue with Adell has been his high strikeouts when he comes. I mean, he's always been awesome playing in the minor leagues. It's just that, when he gets to the majors, it's just been strikeouts. But hopefully better days are ahead for him. When you talk strikeouts, and we'll only spend like a couple seconds on this guy, unfortunately, I feel so bad for Keston Hiura, who got demoted again. Not a surprise at all. We're just hoping that maybe he would have figured things out, but it just seems that every season his K rate just goes up. And this season, in his first 15 games, had a ungodly 47.6 K rate for Keston Hiura.
And the biggest thing is just that they stopped having places to put him.
Yeah.
Right? Jace Peterson's been hitting very well. They want to give him time. They've got Rowdy Tellez who's hitting well. They want to give him time. Actually, he's slowed down a bit. He's slowed down quite a bit over the last week or so. This is normal Rowdy Tellez behavior. Mm-hmm. We deal with this every year. People get really excited about him because he can be really good in short stretches. Hard for him to be really good for long, but anything could still happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck of a value for the 895th overall pick of his draft in 2013. Not too bad. Mm. I wonder how the other 894 are doing. But I mean, when you look at this roster, you do kind of look and just be like, well, what were they going to do with him anyway? When was he going to play? What was he going to play? Right. You can't do anything. Urias has to stay at third. Colton Wong's been a heck of a second baseman. He's hitting really well. There's just nowhere to play him. So
Colton
send him to
Wong has been on fire lately.
Yeah. Big fan of what Colton Wong's doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised by how much he's stealing. His speed kind of just goes up and down every year, but he's already got 8 stolen bases. Mm. So, I mean, I definitely think he could break the 20 stolen base mark for just the second time in his career. And I kind of like, you know, when I look at the numbers he's had in the past, those numbers from his probably best fantasy season in the last 5 years was 2019. And that kind of looks like a decent baseline for this season, except he's likely to finish with a lower batting average. He hit .285 that year. He had 11 home runs, 24 steals. I think he could do double-digit home runs, a little over 20 steals, and he can probably hit .260 the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. Maybe he could do a little better than that. But, you know, hey, I like it a lot. This offense is really clicking right now. Willy Adames has really picked it up. Christian Yelich looks like a new version of himself, like this 20... like a 25 home run, 15 stolen base version, like not that 40-40 guy who's like, looks like an MVP candidate, but a good player, the player we thought he'd be when he got to Milwaukee. Cause when he got to Milwaukee, we were all excited about him as like a sleeper getting out of Miami and that big, you know, that bad team and that big ballpark. We're like, yeah, if he could just hit a few more fly balls, he could be like a 25 home run guy. He's got some speed. And then he went and did like 30-30 or something ridiculous. And totally screwed up our expectations. But I think we've come full circle and we're back to this pretty darn good 25 home run, 15 stolen base hitter.
Yeah. You think that we're not going to see the guy who's going to hit 40 home runs and bat .330 anymore? You think that guy is gone?
We barely got to see him as it is.
We barely got to know you, Yelich. Yeah.
Yeah. We barely got to know him. So, you know, so long farewell, that stinks. But it was really, I mean, you look at the overall track record in terms of like overall numbers, you know, even like the expected numbers, it's 2018, 2019 in its own tier. And then there's everything else. So, I mean, even you look at his overall performance all over the place. He was a 7 war player for 2 straight years. And then every other year, he's like a 2-4 war guy.
Hmm. Yeah, just looking at his last 210 games, batting .236 with 26 homers and 17 stolen bases for a 162 game average of 20 homers and 13 stolen bases. I don't know. Hopefully we could move that up to maybe a mid 20 home run range for a 162 game average. But
I mean, I'll tell you that you probably can. Because he's been a lot better of late. He's had some nice little hot streaks.
Right.
So since April 27th, he's hitting .303 with a .403 OBP, slugging .576. So the power's not the same as it used to be, but 4 home runs, 2 stolen bases in that time, playing every day. I'm all for it. I do think it's there. So there's a good player in there. Just again, it's not the all-star, but it's darn good. And during stretches, he can be all-star like he has been for the last 2 weeks or so.
Right. Let's not forget that has that lingering back issue. Thankfully, it hasn't been an issue so far this season. But a back issue could really sap your power. We keep on talking about it on this podcast. So another guy that hit the IL, Clayton Kershaw. This kind of seemed come out of nowhere, right? Pitching lights out all season long, but hit the 15-day IL due to inflammation of a joint that's located on his pelvis, and specifically it's between the hip and the spine. So thankfully, the good news is it's not an arm issue. So an MRI showed no structural damage. And you just wonder how many innings did the Dodgers buy themselves, if any, by not allowing him to finish his perfect game. You have to think about that, right? And you think about it, Dodgers were probably very smart not to let him finish that game with his injury history. But all of a sudden, the Dodgers, with all that depth, have some issues with their starting rotation there, right? I mean, Walker Buehler, Urias, Tony Gosselin, Tyler Anderson, then all of a sudden they call up Ryan Pepio, made one unimpressive start last week, then was sent down. Then today, the 17th, which is when we're recording this podcast, also gave up 5 walks and 3 innings pitched in his major league debut. And then today had 3 walks and 4 innings pitched. Walks have been, you know, a big issue for him. Has a 3.75 career minor league ERA and 4.3 walk per 9. And the reason why I spend a couple of seconds on him is because, you know, a lot's been made about George Kirby and Silseth from the Angels. And I don't think Pepio is, you know, in that, should be in that group. But at this stage, Dodgers need to lean on him. They had a doubleheader today. And like I said, with Kershaw on the IL, who are they going to bring up? Maybe David Price, maybe Mitch White. I think I'd prefer Mitch White.
Yeah, I mean, how many pitchers do they have on the IL right now? I want to say it's like 8. Mm. Heaney, Kershaw, May, who wasn't expected to help out much.
Right.
Danny Duffy. And then a couple guys I don't know a ton about, like Victor Gonzalez, but Tommy Conley, Jimmy Nelson, and Blake Treinen.
Bullpen guy.
So all there. No. So they've, you know, they've got some depth issues, but their offense is so darn good that who cares? Like that's so good. And like their bullpen is still, you know, their bullpen is still quite strong.
Yes.
I mean, I like a lot of the pieces they have. So, yeah, it sounds depressing, but it's like, who cares? Right. And if mm-hmm. they really want another starter, I mean, they just reactivated David Price. He's available again. Mitch White is a guy who was also on the IL recently. They just activated him. He's another guy who is a bit older than the rest of their prospects, but at one time was highly regarded. He's someone who could maybe get a shot in the coming days. And I also know that I believe they just announced that the early season darling Andrew Heaney is joining the team on their road trip. I don't think he's starting quite yet, but he's throwing bullpen sessions. So he should be back sooner rather than later. Mm.
Jesus Luzardo hit the 15-day IL, Marlins pitcher. Forearm discomfort, but supposedly not the Tommy John type of discomfort. At least that's what he was saying, because he's already had Tommy John surgery, I think, a few years back. And, of course, anytime that a Marlins starter goes on the IL, everyone starts thinking about Max Meyer. Meyer is not currently on the 40-man roster, but supposedly there's an empty spot on that roster. So, but unfortunately, Meyer, who some people have been stashing, not me yet, but he's been slumping at the wrong time. He had his most recent start moved up to today, Tuesday afternoon, and things didn't go well. This guy pitched 3.1 innings, gave up 8 runs, and I think he walked 4 batters as well. Some people very high on Marlins prospect Edward Cabrera as well, but when you just take a look at his stats, I mean, they don't blow me away, but I guess you could keep him on your watch list and just check out what Nick Pollock and Alex Fast have to say about him.
Yeah, and why start using up Meyer's options or anything like that when you've still got multiple options for Braxton Garrett? You've still got an option left for Edward Cabrera, and you still have like a bunch of guys on your rotation right now that are all good, right? Alcantara, they've had Poteet step in and he's been good. Mm-hmm. Pablo Lopez, Trevor Rogers. And, you know, even though he hasn't been playing well this season, Alicia Hernandez as a fifth starter, you bet. I'm all for that. You absolutely. So the thing about, you know, I mentioned in that Reddit AMA first that in redraft leagues, I don't stash pitchers unless they're like truly game changing ability. And even if Meyer came up, you never know how pitchers are going to do when they first come up, because you just have so many things going on. And, you know, there's, you know, he'll go out there, probably try to throw, you know, 200 miles an hour, all those things. So it makes them really volatile. And just how many starts would he get? Like, in what universe does Max Meyer come to the, like, I know he's in AAA. He was in AAA last year. He's going to be ready soon, but he still only has like 40. He has 46 innings in AAA. That's it. Nine starts. He has nine starts in AAA. So why, you know, why burn all that? Why not let him work down there? Why not let him do that when you've got other guys you want to take a look at anyway and a full rotation?
Hmm. Yeah. Chase Silseth is a pitcher I just mentioned, and Angels are going to let him get another start on Friday. Pitched pretty well last week, six innings pitched. Actually got the win last week. Also, hey, you got to check out Nick Pollock's TikTok videos. He broke down Chase Silseth's first two innings of work. I mean, nobody does it better than Nick. And you got to love Silseth's filthy splitter. And I actually was able to pick him up in a league because everyone was busy. In NFBC leagues, George Kirby, this was the first week that you could get him. So you had individuals making $300, $400, $500 bids on Kirby, but end up picking up Silseth. Glad that he's getting that second start there.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty exciting. The thing, you know, with the Angels right now is that they're running that six-man rotation, so it's hard to know exactly, like, when guys will get more chances. I imagine, though, they'll continue running that because of Ohtani. Ohtani kind of changes how they can run that rotation, and they've also got just, I think, a couple guys that I don't know if they trust as full-time starters all the time, like Michael Lorenzen, Chase Silseth, Reed Detmers, but they can trust them for parts of the season and then just keep rotating guys in and out of there, right? Just, you know, in the minors, they've got not a ton, but they've got a couple. I think Jose Suarez could see some time, you know, he'll see some time this year. You know, they'll just rotate guys in and out and see how it goes. And just, you know, with a six-man rotation, it also takes some pressure off of your bullpen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in many ways, so you can be more flexible there. It'll be, you know, I do think it'll be interesting to see how it all develops, but also, you know, in fantasy, he's a streamer.
Hmm.
That's it. That's all you can really use him for but luckily he plays in the AL West, and that means he gets the Rangers and the A's
right
quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at least he gets to do that.
He gets to face Marcus Semien, who doesn't have any home runs.
Yeah, and the rest of those rosters, which have, like, no power. I mean, Oakland was slugging, like, 302 up until, like, they played the Tigers.
Hey, we'll leave the pitcher analysis to Nick and Alex because they do it best. But let's take a look at some deep league options in terms of hitters that have been coming on of late. Yeah, these aren't stars and probably not even on your hitter list, which before we say goodbye, we'll get a little update on that. But deep sleeper stopgap options there, Scott. So Brendan Rodgers, man, got off to a horrific start. Plays for your favorite team, the Rockies, right? Second baseman. By the end of April, he was just batting .078. May has been a magical month for him. I even had dropped him in one of my leagues. But in his first 11 games of the month of May, .370 batting average, .370 OBP, and a .609 slug. Two home runs and 13 RBI in those 11 games. So Brendan Rodgers, is he a guy that you feel comfortable picking up again?
At home, yeah. Turns out he's at home all week this week.
Yeah.
So he has another home series this weekend if he's still out there in your leagues. I was snapping up all kinds of Rockies. They actually started heating up before they even got home. So something, I mean, I kind of like Brendan Rodgers. He's especially good at home. If he starts slumping, cut him again. He's just a kind of a middle infielder that is probably going to be added and dropped by several teams in your 12-team leagues. But just remember, what's going to happen is this Sunday, you're going to go to your waiver wire and you're going to say, oh, I wonder what I should add this week. And you're going to do what a lot of people do, and this is totally fine. I do it too. You're going to list the players by last 15 days performance. You know who's going to be at the top of that list? A whole bunch of Rockies, because they just spent about 15 days at home, right? Like, that's just how it's going to go. You're going to see Jose Iglesias. You're going to see Jonathan Daza. You're going to see, like, all these guys, and you'll be like, wow, I wonder if there's something here. And just remember, they were at home all week.
Yeah.
Against some soft pitching matchups too. Like that's what they're doing. So they're going to be at the top of these lists. It doesn't mean you shouldn't add them. It just means you should recognize the context with which you're adding them.
Hmm. Yep. So you had talked about warning listeners about that with the Rockies. So
danger, Will Robinson. Danger, no, Will Robinson.
There was a guy even, and you could continue, but Jonathan Daza. I was just about to add him, and then I went with somebody else. But you look at what he's done so far, and then this week, the week that we're recording, a bunch of home games. In Colorado. I mean, but this guy, though, Daza, career 318 average in the minor leagues. And so far in 60 at-bats this season, batting 383 with a 424 OBP and a 450 slug. Doesn't have, I know that 450 slug might make you think that he has some power. Doesn't, but he's basically a batting average machine.
It's hard to slug less than 400 in Coors. He's more of like a singles and doubles guy. You'll notice that his total number of home runs in the major leagues is 2 in 507 plate appearances. And that's about right. That's probably all he's going to hit. What you're seeing right now is a guy who can make a lot of slap contact, getting a bunch of primo starting spots at home. So he's going to be able to generate this high batting average. I think he can do that all year. I think he can hit 280 to 300 all year. He did it last year too. Just the rest of the stuff isn't going to be there. So when he's hot and he's at home, he'll get you some doubles. But like, what's weird in fantasy baseball, in a standard roto league, you know how valuable a double is? Nothing if no one's on base. It's just a regular hit. Mm-hmm. Slugging isn't part of your league. Doubles usually aren't a stat. Right. So he's a weird guy to use in roto style leagues because he's mostly just batting average. But there is value to that. I talk about those kinds of players a lot. So when he's at home, especially when he's hitting near the top of the lineup like he is now, yeah, go ahead and wheel him out there. He would have been a good add for this week. Mm-hmm. And then you would have been looking to replace him for next week because the worst thing about the Coors effect is when they first go on the road, they're even worse than usual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, he's a good streamer, right, going forward?
Yeah, I mean, really, that whole team is. It's just a team. It's a team of streamers and CJ Cron and a couple other guys.
Right. Brendan Donovan's a guy that I added in one league. Got him real cheap. Eligible at third base in CBS, second base in Yahoo. Has played first base, third base, shortstop, outfield. I have a feeling he's just going to be second base and third base eligible, and probably will pick up shortstop eligibility as well. Probably going to benefit from Paul DeJong's demotion, right? Opened up some playing time for him. And Nolan Gorman's still in the minor leagues and probably will be for a little while. But batted 308 in his first 26 at-bats. Disciplined hitter, has some power, some speed, and can hit for average 285, 386, 429. Triple slash in 4 minor league seasons.
Ain't that just like the freaking Cardinals? I mean, who, like out of nowhere. All right. So, Tyler O'Neill's slumping. Dylan Carlson's not panning out. Oh no. What's going to happen? I don't know. We got some dude named Juan Yepes. Y'all have never heard of. He'll come up and be our number 4 hitter.
Yeah.
We'll go get Brendan Donovan, who also none of you have all ever heard of, like a 7th round pick from 2018. Yep. He's on board too. Let's do this. He'll start hitting. We don't need our real hitters to hit. Who needs that? I'll just use Brendan Donovan and Juan Yepes, and it's working. Mm. Like, what the? Ain't that just the most Cardinals thing to just grab some random dude and have him start hitting? That's what's happening. He's a random dude who started hitting.
Yeah, I'll take him. Eli White, been playing center field for the Texas Rangers, been batting leadoff. 8 stolen bases, hasn't been caught. And look, this guy might still, I know he's a better hitter, I believe, against lefty pitching, but has been getting at-bats against both righties and lefties in the recent games. 280, 359, 418, triple slash in 5 minor league seasons. With all of us still looking for stolen bases, this guy could be a nice addition in a deep league.
Yeah, for those. Like, don't get cute. There's not anything else here. This is speed and speed. And then there's a bit more speed and that's about it. And some hit tool.
And he's fast too. No,
yeah, he's fast. I mean, he's a decent fielder. He's more of a defensive guy than an offense guy. And that's fine for center field, especially when you're a really, really bad team like the Rangers. So, I mean, he's going to be, you know, he's a guy that can play, you know, he can play left. He can play center. He can do lots of cool stuff. It'll be a lot more interesting if more than one or two guys can hit at a time in Texas, right? Mm-hmm. It seems like whenever one gets better, someone else gets worse. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's a roto play. I don't really need him in any head-to-head league. I'm not really looking for him in 12-teamers. He's just a guy who might steal some bases and fill a hole in your outfield.
Mm-hmm. And the next couple of guys, pretty much, I think you could say the same thing. Ben Gamel, Pirates outfielder, in his first 107 at-bats, batting .290 with a .367 OBP and a .449 slug, 15 RBI. But he's been leading off, I guess, play him while he's hot, right? And Luis Gonzalez, outfielder for the Giants. I actually picked him up in a deep league and hasn't played past couple of days, but before that was playing every day. Let's see, 349 batting average, 15 RBI, which is decent in his first 21 games, right? Two home runs, three stolen bases, has shown the ability to steal bases in his minor league career. Good discipline, just a 13.7 K rate.
Yeah. You know what I just realized when I was researching some of the, you know, some of these guys, I'm like, oh yeah, Ben Gamel. Every year we talk about Ben Gamel just a little bit. You know, my good friend Mikey Ahedo always liked him too. He's kind of a scrappy slap hitter who can go on some runs, especially against right-handed pitching.
Right.
That's what he's doing now. You look at his career numbers, it's always like they end up being the same, but in season, he's basically like he gives you like 1 to 2 months throughout the season that are good, and then everything else is like, it's not really there. Cause again, not a ton of power.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, this is about as good as he can hit, and he's slugging like .436.
Mm.
It's just all the power he has. He could hit 10 home runs in a full season if he gets the whole year, but it'd be hard for him to do as a Pirate because of the, you know, the big home ballpark. But, you know, there's something there. But one thing I had no idea about, did you know the Pirates only start one right-handed batter most of the time?
Wow.
Brian Hayes is the only true right-handed batter. They've got Brian Reynolds, who's a switch, and Rodolfo Castro, who they've been using at shortstop, to switch. They play Diego Castillo off the bench. Michael Chavez is right-handed, and he substitutes at second and third sometimes. But most of this team is left-handed. It's
bizarre. That's a shocker. That's like the exact opposite of the Blue Jays, right? But how could you compare the two lineups? But Blue Jays, heavy right-handed lineup with just basically Tapia at this stage. Mike Moustakas, you talk about a guy without power. This guy has power and has been actually pretty productive since he came off the IL in his last 16 games. .327 batting average with three home runs and eight RBI. Not going to hit for average, but he could be a stopgap power guy for you.
Yeah, remember when he was like always the perennial, like, everyone's forgetting about Mike Moustakas because he had like three straight seasons where he was like a 30 home run hitter with, you know, decent batting average. So, you know, those days are long gone. They aren't coming back. You know, get those dreams right out of your mind. But there could be a decent hitter here, like a 20 home run guy with a low batting average. There's leagues where that plays. Only leagues, 15 teamers where you need that corner or middle infield or something. But otherwise, I'm just not that interested in Mike Moustakas. I don't know. You know, what are you hoping he becomes at this point? Because there's no way you can believe that the 2017 through 2019 Mike Moustakas is still there.
I guess you're hoping what, for 250, 25 home runs? I mean, the guy is a solid power hitter.
Well, he was.
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't just, you know, turn into a weakling. I mean,
but that's the thing, is he kind of did. like that's what we've seen, right? Like, it's all just gone. It just left. So it's really weird, but I guess we'll see. I mean, I think that would be the best realistic outcome. is a 25 home run hitter.
Yeah.
So obviously that plays, especially when you have middle and corner infield spots to fill. But you know, I think anything more shallow than that, like a 10 team standard Yahoo league, you just can't care that much about this right now.
Yeah. I am looking at his hard hit rate. I think it's only 23%, according to Fangraphs. So maybe you're right. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he needs to eat a spinach.
We'll see.
Yeah. All right. What do you do when your hitter list that comes out today? Cause the podcast comes out on Wednesday, Bryce Harper, he's been actually playing better. He's got a little small tear in his right UCL, getting some pre-planned platelet-rich plasma treatment. So he was out of the lineup Sunday and Tuesday. But playing with that little injury, he's been on fire. It doesn't seem to affect him. He's not going to be able to play the field, but thank God that the NL adopted the DH. What have you done with Bryce Harper hitter list-wise?
So the big question I have, so right now, I mean, coming into this and on the last list, he was ranked 7th overall, but he was not in the top tier. So the question I have to ask myself is, do I like Bryce Harper more than I like Mike Trout? So I haven't made that decision yet. Both have played really well. Worth noting that in the month of May, no one has been good as Bryce Harper. He has 6 home runs, which is tied for the most. He has 12 runs scored. That's the 4th most out of 180 qualified hitters in the month of May. His RBI is 13. That's 8th most. And then, of course, he stole 3 bases, which is tied for 4th most. Like, he's literally, he's like doing everything right
now. He's a one-man wrecking crew.
He is on fire. He's unstoppable. There's nothing anyone can really do about it. His WRC plus is like 20 something points higher than anyone else for the month of May. So I'll tell you this. The number 2 ISO in the month of May belongs to Giancarlo Stanton, and it is 400. What do you think Bryce Harper's ISO is for the month of May?
Yeah, let's go 500.
521, Joe.
That was fairly close. Okay. I got to start studying.
521. Do you know how that stat is calculated? It's your slugging minus your batting average. Slugging 521 would be good. Really good. Really? He's slugging 917.
Reigning NL MVP. Yeah.
53 plate appearances to slug 917. That's comical.
I got a tear in my UCL. Who cares?
Don't need it. It's a dumb league. He has, you know how many more points of slugging he has than the next highest, which is Gene Segura somehow. Yeah. So Gene Segura's slugging 727, which means he's behind by 190 points of slugging.
Oh, wow.
So while I've done it, I've convinced myself Bryce Harper is going to move ahead of Mike Trout, but is still not in the top overall tier, because the top overall tier right now is 5 players I think that people would actually draft first overall. Ronald Acuna Jr., Vlad Guerrero Jr., Jose Ramirez, Trey Turner, Juan Soto. I've heard good arguments for all of them. As much as I like Bryce Harper, I don't think anyone would take Bryce Harper over those 5 guys. Maybe one of them. But there ain't no way someone's taking Bryce Harper over Acuna Jr., who is back in the lineup and healthy, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Trey Turner, Juan Soto, or Jose Ramirez. It's just not happening. So he is as high as he could possibly get. So I like him a lot. I talked about Gene Segura. I'm moving Gene Segura up quite a bit. I always make fun of Gene Segura because, like, normally what happens is by the end of the season, he's this guy that has like 11 home runs, 11 stolen bases, and looks really, really good on like a player rater because he gets like 700 something plate appearances. He just is healthy and plays a lot. So he's an accumulator, and he's not very valuable in a Yahoo standard league because there's no middle infield, and there's almost always something with more potential out on the wire. But I have to move him up right now because he's hitting well, and he should absolutely be streaming for a lot of teams. I mean,
kudos to you.
Yeah, like if you had Owen Miller, like get rid of him. Right, there's something better right now. Go do that right now. Stream that right now. Andres Jimenez, he's out there. Go stream that right now. Mm-hmm. Another guy that's moving up. And something I think that a lot of people are going to have to, that's going to take some getting used to, is much like the back end of Nick's list, I'm going to move these guys aggressively all the time because they're streamers. And what do we do with streamers? We cut them. We cut them, we use them until we don't want them anymore, and we cut them. And it sounds so cold, but that's how these rankings should work. There's no reason whatsoever to hold on to if Brandon Belt was cold in a 12-team league, generally speaking, you should cut him and find something else. Like a Trey Mancini who's heated up a little bit, right? Or if it was in your utility spot, like Alec Thomas was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely someone that, people should be still paying attention to. There's just no need to wait. Like, why would anyone I wanted to wait on AJ Pollock because in theory, when Andrew Vaughn went down, he had this nice spot hitting second in this lineup and could really turn things around. He didn't. So he's a cut in three outfield leagues. And even some 10 and maybe even a 12 team five outfield league, depending on your roster construction, right? Like, I don't feel bad if my opponents get to pick up AJ Pollock. I don't care. Even if he's the best player left on the wire. Do you think I care if my, in a 12 team league, if someone else has AJ Pollock? I don't think so.
Especially since he's going to hit the IL before long anyway. But
yeah. And that's the reason no one will trade you for him either. Because they're like, well, you're going to cut him anyway. Mm-hmm. I'll just wait. You'll cut him. Mm-hmm. And if I really want him, I'm not going to pay anything for it. So that's kind of how the list is working. So that back end moves around a lot. I think there are some players who I've been holding near the top of the list, just kind of waiting that I think have to fall more. Luckily, one of those guys isn't Whit Merrifield. So I'm happy about that. He's really turned things around lately, hitting, getting hits every game, maybe even two hits. I believe he had some hits today. But as I was looking at that game today, I just noticed something I'll really have to do on my hitter list is figure out, hopefully I can get some news. So I figure out where to put Sal Perez, who is hitting the IL with a thumb issue.
Mm.
So, that does give some opportunity to MJ Melendez. He will not be on the list. There's no reality where MJ Melendez, he's a streaming catcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So I'm not really interested in that, but that's kind of really what's going on with the hitter list. More and more places are kind of locking in. Max Muncy's probably going to have to move down. That's a big one. I had Marcus Semien at 45 and he's going to take a huge plunge.
Mm.
He's probably going to drop by 50 or more. So, there's that going on too, but yeah, I guess I'll have to finish putting it together, but those are really some of the biggest movers.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, sounds like you've got a full evening still ahead of you as you adjust the hitter list. We look forward to reading it on Wednesday, the 18th, and that slams the lid on things for today. Great stuff, as always, there, Scott. Next time we get together should be Wednesday, May 25th, a day of significance. Don't forget to follow me at Joe Galina. Follow that guy. His name is Scott Chu. Follow him at If the Chu Fits. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. And look, if you have anything specific that you want us to cover, let us know there. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, wherever you download your podcast, and give us a nice review if you can. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.